Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn. Trademark and copyright 1993 by Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. This recording of the full-length reading of Star Wars, The Last Command, was published by arrangement with Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio, a division of Bantam Doubleday Dell Publishing Group, Incorporated, and was produced in 1995 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which holds the copyright there, too. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape, Incorporated. This book is read by Larry A. McKeever. Please observe the following procedures as you listen to these tapes. If you have borrowed this book from your local library, please return it to them at the end of the agreed period. If you are one of our regular rental customers, you may keep your book for 30 days from date of receipt by you, but after that time, we charge additional rental of 25 cents per day. Dates are checked by postmark. Please return this book at the earliest possible time so another subscriber can have the use of this recording. To return cassettes to us, simply make sure they are all packaged in their plastic cassette cases and in proper order in the mailing container. Kindly seal the mailing container for return. Postage is already paid. Drop in any mailbox for return to Books on Tape. Should a cassette fail to play properly, hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard, flat surface. If this does not work, or if you cannot otherwise free the reels and you are a library customer, please ask your local library to contact Books on Tape for a replacement cassette. If you are one of our rental customers, please call us at our regular customer service number. Give us the name of the book and number of the cassette. We will immediately send you a replacement at no charge. Discard the broken cassette. Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn. This book consists of 29 chapters and is 376 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. The Last Command. Heir to the Empire was a number one New York Times bestseller and the science fiction publishing event of the year. Dark Force Rising continued the gripping new adventures of Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, and the other heroes of the most popular trilogy in movie history. Now the saga concludes with The Last Command, the climactic volume of a three-book cycle authorized by Lucasfilm Limited and written by Hugo Award-winning author Timothy Zahn. It is 5 years after the events of Return of the Jedi. The fragile New Republic reels from the attacks of Grand Admiral Thrawn, who has not only rallied the remaining Imperial forces, but has driven the rebels back with an abominable new technology, clone soldiers. Hopes are dim as Thrawn mounts a final siege against the Republic. While Han and Chewbacca struggle to form a wary alliance of smugglers in a last-ditch attack against the Empire, Leia keeps the alliance together and prepares for the birth of her Jedi twins. But the Empire has too many ships and too many clones to combat. The Republic's only hope lies in sending a small force led by Luke into the very stronghold that houses Thrawn's terrible cloning machines. There, a final danger awaits. The dark Jedi Cabauth schemes in his secret fortress, directing the battle against the rebels, nursing his insanity, and building his strength to finish what he had already started, the destruction of Luke Skywalker. An odyssey of fast-paced action, stunning revelation, and final confrontation, The Last Command spans a galaxy in flames, a tale that will conclude in this third and last installment, as good and evil battle, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Timothy Zahn is one of science fiction's most popular voices, known for his ability to tell very human stories against a well-researched background of future science and technology. He won the Hugo Award for his novella Cascade Point, and is the author of 13 science fiction novels, including Cobra, The Black Collar, and War Horse, as well as three collections of short fiction. Timothy Zahn lives in Oregon. The Dedication. For all those who helped make these books possible, especially Anna Zahn, Betsy Mitchell, Lucy Autry Wilson, and of course, the man whose vision started it all, George Lucas. Chapter 1. Gliding through the blackness of deep space, the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera pointed its mighty arrowhead shape toward the dim star of its target system, 3,000ths of a light year away, and prepared itself for war. "All systems show battle ready, Admiral," the comm officer reported from the portside crew pit. "The task force is beginning to check in."
"Very good, Lieutenant," Grand Admiral Thrawn nodded. "Inform me when all have done so. Captain Pelion?"
"Sir," Pelion said, searching his superior's face for the stress the Grand Admiral must be feeling. The stress he himself was certainly feeling. This was not just another tactical strike against the rebellion after all, not a minor shipping raid, or even a complex but straightforward hit and fade against some insignificant planetary base. After nearly a month of frenzied preparations, Thrawn's master campaign for the Empire's final victory was about to be launched. But if the Grand Admiral was feeling any tension, he was keeping it to himself.
"Begin the countdown," he told Pelion, his voice as calm as if he were ordering dinner.
"Yes, sir," Pelion said, turning back to the group of one-quarter-size holographic figures standing before him in the Chimera's aft bridge hologram pod. "Gentlemen, launch marks. Bellicose, 3 minutes."
"Acknowledged, Chimera," Captain Aban nodded, his proper military demeanor not quite masking his eagerness to take this war back to the rebellion.
"Good hunting." The holo image sputtered and vanished as the Bellicose raised its deflector shields, cutting off long-range communications. Pelion shifted his attention to the next image in line. "Relentless, 4.5 minutes. "Acknowledged," Captain Doha said, cupping his right fist in his left in an ancient Meerschaum gesture of victory, as he too vanished from the hologram pod. Pelion glanced at his datapad. "Judicator, 6 minutes.
"We're ready, Chimera," Captain Brandeis said, his voice soft.
Soft and just a little bit wrong. Pelion frowned at him. Quarter-sized holos didn't show a lot of detail, but even so, the expression on Brandeis' face was easy to read. It was the expression of a man out for blood.
"This is war, Captain Brandeis," Thrawn said, coming up silently to Pelion's side. "Not an opportunity for personal revenge."
"I understand my duty, Admiral," Brandeis said stiffly. Thrawn's blue-black eyebrows lifted slightly.
"Do you, Captain? Do you indeed?"
Slowly, reluctantly, some of the fire faded from Brandeis' face.
"Yes, sir," he muttered. "My duty is to the Empire, and to you, and to the ships and crews under my command."
"Very good," Thrawn said. "To the living, in other words, not to the dead."
Brandeis was still glowering, but he gave a dutiful nod.
"Yes, sir."
"Never forget that, Captain," Thrawn warned him. "The fortunes of war rise and fall, and you may be assured that the rebellion will be repaid in full for their destruction of the peremptory at the Katana fleet skirmish. But that repayment will occur in the context of our overall strategy, not as an act of private vengeance."
His glowing red eyes narrowed slightly.
"Certainly not by any fleet captain under my command. I trust I make myself clear."
Brandeis' cheek twitched.
Pelion had never thought of the man as brilliant, but he was smart enough to recognize a threat when he heard one.
Very clear, Admiral.
Good.
Thrawn eyed him a moment longer, then nodded.
I believe you've been given your launch, Mark.
Yes, sir. Judicator out.
Thrawn looked at Pelion.
Continue, Captain, he said,
and turned away.
Yes, sir.
Pelion looked at his datapad. Nemesis? He finished the list without further incident. By the time the last holo image disappeared, the final check-in from their own task force was complete.
The timetable appears to be running smoothly, Thrawn said, as Pelion returned to his command station.
The Stormhawk reports that the guide freighters launched on time with tow cables functioning properly, and we've just intercepted a general emergency call from the Endo system.
The Bellicose and its task force, right on schedule. Any response, sir? Pelion asked.
The rebel base at Ord Padron acknowledged, Thrawn said. It should be interesting to see how much help they send.
Pelion nodded. The rebels had seen enough of Thrawn's tactics by now to expect Ando to be a feint and to respond accordingly. But on the other hand, an attack force consisting of an Imperial Star Destroyer and 8 Katana Fleet dreadnoughts was hardly something they could afford to dismiss out of hand either. Not that it really mattered. They would send a few ships to Ando to fight the Bellicose, and a few more to Filv to fight the Judicator, and a few more to Krondre to fight the Nemesis, then so on and so on. By the time the Death's Head hit the base itself, Ord Padron would be down to a skeleton defense and screaming itself for all the reinforcements the rebellion could scramble. And that was where those reinforcements would go, leaving the Empire's true target ripe for the picking. Pelion looked out the forward viewport at the star of the Ukiyu system dead ahead, his throat tightening as he contemplated again the enormous conceit of this whole plan. With planetary shields able to hold off all but the most massive turbolaser and proton torpedo bombardment, conventional wisdom held that the only way to subdue a modern world was to put a fast-moving ground force down at the edges and send them overland to destroy the shield generators. Between the fire laid down by the ground force and the subsequent orbital assault, the target world was always badly damaged by the time it was finally taken. The alternative, landing hundreds of thousands of troops in a major ground campaign that could stretch into months or years, was no better. To capture a planet relatively undamaged, but with shield generators still intact, was considered an impossibility. That bit of military wisdom would fall today, along with Ukiyo itself.
Intercepted distress signal from Filv, Admiral, the comm officer reported. Ord Padron again responding.
Good.
Thrawn consulted his chrono.
7 minutes, I think, and we'll be able to move.
His lips compressed just noticeably.
I suppose we'd better confirm that our exalted Jedi Master is ready to do his part.
Pelion hid a grimace. Jorus Kabauth, insane clone of the long-dead Jedi Master Joris Kabauth, who a month ago had proclaimed himself the true heir to the Empire. He didn't like talking to the man any more than Thrawn did, but he might as well volunteer. If he didn't, it would simply become an order.
I'll go, sir, he said, standing up.
Thank you, Captain, Thrawn said, as if Pelion would have had a choice.
He felt the mental summons the moment he stepped beyond the force protection of the Isalamiri scattered about the bridge on their nutrient frames. Master Kabalv clearly was impatient for the operation to begin. Preparing himself as best he could, Fighting against Cabal's casual mental pressure to hurry, Pelion made his way down to Thrawn's command room. The chamber was brightly lit, in marked contrast to the subdued lighting the Grand Admiral usually preferred.
"Captain Pelion," Cabal called, beckoning to him from the double display ring in the center of the room. "Come in. I've been waiting for you."
"The rest of the operation has taken my full attention," Pelion told him stiffly, trying to hide his distaste for the man, knowing full well how futile such attempts were.
"Of course," Cabal smiled,
a smile that showed more effectively than any words his amusement with Pelion's discomfort.
"No matter. I take it Grand Admiral Thrawn is finally ready."
"Almost," Pelion said. "We want to clear out Ord Padron as much as possible before we move." Cabal snorted.
"You continue to assume the New Republic will dance to the Grand Admiral's tune."
"They will," Pelion said. "The Grand Admiral has studied the enemy thoroughly."
"He's studied their artwork,"
Cabal countered, with another snort.
"That will be useful if the time ever comes when the New Republic has nothing but artists left to throw against us."
A signal from the display ring saved Pelion from the need to reply. "We're moving," he told Cabal, starting a mental countdown of the 76 seconds it would take to reach the Ukiyu system from their position, and trying not to let Cabal's words get under his skin. He didn't understand himself how Thrawn could so accurately learn the innermost secrets of a species from its artwork. But he'd seen that knowledge proved often enough to trust the Grand Admiral's instincts on such things. Cabal hadn't. But then, Cabal wasn't really interested in an honest debate on the subject. For the past month, ever since declaring himself to be the true heir to the Emperor, Cabal had been pressing this quiet war against Thrawn's credibility, implying that true insight came only through the Force, and, therefore, only through him. Pelion himself didn't buy that argument. The Emperor had been deep into this Force thing, too, and he hadn't even been able to predict his own death at Endor. But the seeds of uncertainty Cabal was trying to sow were nevertheless starting to take hold, particularly among the less experienced of Thrawn's officers. Which was, for Pelion, just one more reason why this attack had to succeed. The outcome hinged as much on Thrawn's reading of the Ukiyan cultural ethos as it did on straight military tactics. On Thrawn's conviction that, at a basic psychological level, the Ukiyans were terrified of the impossible.
"He will not always be right," Cabal said into Pelion's musings.
Pelion bit down hard on the inside of his cheek, the skin of his back crawling at having had his thoughts so casually invaded.
"You don't have any concept of privacy, do you?" he growled. "I am the Empire, Captain Pelion," Cabal said, his eyes glowing with a dark, fanatical fire. "Your thoughts are a part of your service to me."
"My service is to Grand Admiral Thrawn," Pelion said stiffly. Cabal smiled.
"You may believe that if you wish, but to business, true Imperial business. When the battle here is over, Captain Pelion, I want a message sent to Wayland."
"Announcing your imminent return, no doubt," Pelion said sourly. Cabal had been insisting for nearly a month now that he would soon be going back to his former home on Wayland, where he would take command of the cloning facility in the Emperor's old storehouse inside Mount Tantus. So far, he'd been too busy trying to subvert Thrawn's position to do anything more than talk about it. Do not worry, Captain Pelion, Cabal said, all amused again. When the time is right, I will indeed return to Wayland. Which is why you will contact Wayland after this battle is over and order them to create a clone for me. A very special clone.
Grand Admiral Thrawn will have to authorize that, were the words that came to mind.
What kind do you want?
Were the ones that inexplicably came out. Pelion blinked, running the memory over in his mind again.
Yes, that was what he'd said, all right.
Cabal smiled again at his silent confusion.
I merely wish a servant, he said. Someone who will be waiting there for me when I return. Formed from one of the Emperor's prize souvenirs. Sample B-23-32-54, I believe it was. You will, of course, impress upon the garrison commander there that this must be done in total secrecy.
I will do nothing of the sort.
Yes,
Pelion heard himself say instead. The sound of the word shocked him, but certainly he didn't mean it. On the contrary, as soon as the battle was over, he'd be reporting this little incident directly to Thrawn.
You will also keep this conversation a private matter between ourselves,
Cabal said lazily.
Once you have obeyed, you will forget it even happened.
Of course, Pelion nodded, just to shut him up. Yes, he'd report this to Thrawn, all right. The Grand Admiral would know what to do. The countdown reached zero, and on the main wall display, the planet Ukiyo appeared. We should put up a tactical display, Master Cabalth, he said. Cabalth waved a hand.
As you wish.
Pelion reached over the double display ring and touched the proper key, and in the center of the room, the holographic tactical display appeared. The Chimera was driving toward high orbit above the Sunside equator. The 10 Katana Fleet dreadnoughts of its task force were splitting up into outer and inner defense positions, and the Stormhawk was coming in as backstop from the night side. Other ships, mostly freighters and other commercial types, could be seen dropping through the brief gaps ground control was opening for them in Ukiyo's energy shield, a hazy blue shell surrounding the planet about 50 kilometers above the surface. Two of the blips flashed red, the guide freighters from the Stormhawk, looking as innocent as all the rest of the ships scurrying madly for cover. The freighters and the four invisible companions they towed.
Invisible only to those without eyes to see them, Cabalth murmured.
So now you can see the ships themselves, can you? Pelion growled. How Jedi skills grow. He'd been hoping to irritate Cabalth a little. Not much, just a little. But it was a futile effort.
I can see the men inside your precious cloaking shields,
the Jedi Master said placidly.
I can see their thoughts and guide their wills. What does the metal itself matter?
Pelion felt his lip twist. I suppose there's a lot that doesn't matter to you, he said. From the corner of his eye, he saw Cabalth smile.
What doesn't matter to a Jedi Master does not matter to the universe.
The freighters and cloaked cruisers were nearly to the shield now. They'll be dropping the tow cables as soon as they're inside the shield, Pelion reminded Cabalth. Are you ready? The Jedi Master straightened up in his seat and closed his eyes to slits.
I await the Grand Admiral's command, he said sardonically.
For another second, Pelion looked at the other's composed expression, a shiver running up through him. He could remember vividly the first time Cabalth had tried this kind of direct long-distance control,
could remember the pain that had been on Cabal's face, the pinched look of concentration and agony as he struggled to hold the metal contacts. Barely 2 months ago, Thrawn had confidently said that Cabal would never be a threat to the Empire because he lacked the ability to focus and concentrate his Jedi power on a long-term basis. Somehow, between that time and now, Cabal had obviously succeeded in learning the necessary control, which left Cabal as a threat to the Empire. A very dangerous threat, indeed. The intercom beeped. Captain Pelion? Pelion reached over the display ring and touched the key, pushing away his fears about Cabal as best he could. For the moment, at least, the fleet needed Cabal. Fortunately, perhaps, Cabal also needed the fleet.
We're ready, Admiral, he said.
Stand by, Thrawn said. Tow cables detaching now.
They are free, Cabal said. They are under power, moving now to their appointed positions.
Confirm that they're beneath the planetary shield, Thrawn ordered.
For the first time, a hint of the old strain crossed Cabal's face. Hardly surprising. With the cloaking shield preventing the Chimera from seeing the cruisers, and at the same time blinding the cruiser's own sensors, the only way to know exactly where they were was for Cabal to do a precise location check on the mines he was touching. All four ships are beneath the shield, he said.
Be absolutely certain, Jedi Master, if you're wrong.
I am not wrong, Grand Admiral Thrawn, Cabal cut him off harshly. I will do my part in this battle. Concern yourself with yours. For a moment, the intercom was silent. Pelion winced, visualizing the Grand Admiral's expression.
Very well, Jedi Master, Thrawn said calmly. Prepare to do your part.
There was a double click of an opening comm channel.
This is the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera calling the Overliege of Ukiyo, Thrawn said. In the name of the Empire, I declare the Ukiyan system to be once again under the mandate of Imperial law and the protection of Imperial forces. You will lower your shields, recall all military units to their bases, and prepare for an orderly transfer of command.
There was no response.
I know you're receiving this message, Thrawn continued. If you fail to respond, I will have to assume that you mean to resist the Empire's offer. In that event, I would have no choice but to open hostilities.
Again, silence. They're sending another transmission, Pelion heard the comm officer say. Sounds a little more panicked than the first one was.
I'm certain their third will be even more so, Thrawn told him. Prepare for firing sequence one. Master Cabal.
The cruisers are ready, Grand Admiral Thrawn, Cabal said, as am I.
Be sure that you are, Thrawn said, quietly threatening. Unless the timing is absolutely perfect, this entire show will be worse than useless. Turbolaser Battery 3, stand by firing sequence 1 on my mark. 3, 2, 1, fire.
On the tactical hologram, a double lance of green fire angled out from the Chimera's turbolaser batteries toward the planet below. The blasts struck the hazy blue of the planetary shield, splashed slightly as their energy was defocused and reflected back into space. And, with the desired perfect timing, the two cloaked cruisers hovering on repulsor lifts beneath the shield at those 2 points fired in turn. their turbolaser blasts sizzling through the atmosphere into two of Ukiyo's major air defense bases. That was what Pelion saw. The Ukiyans, with no way of knowing about the cloaked cruisers, would have seen the Chimera fire two devastating shots cleanly through an impenetrable planetary shield.
"Third transmission cut off right in the middle, sir," the comm officer reported with a touch of dark humor. "I think we surprised them."
"Let's convince them it wasn't a fluke," Thrawn said. "Prepare firing sequence 2. Master Kabauth?"
"The cruisers are ready."
"Turbolaser battery 2, stand by firing sequence 2 on my mark. 3, 2, 1, fire."
Again, the green fire lanced out. And again, with perfect timing, the cloaked cruisers created their illusion.
"Well done," Thrawn said. "Master Kabauth, move the cruisers into position for sequences 3 and 4.
"As you command, Grand Admiral Thrawn."
Unconsciously, Pelion braced himself. Sequence 4 had two of the Ukiyan's 30 overlapping shield generators as its targets. Launching such an attack would mean that Thrawn had given up on his stated goal of taking Ukiyo with its planetary defenses intact.
"Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, this is Tal Dos Yah of the Ukiyan Overliege."
A slightly quavering voice came from the intercom speaker. "We would ask you to cease your bombardment of Ukiyo while we discuss terms for surrender."
"My terms are quite simple," Thrawn said. "You will begin by lowering your planetary shield and allowing my forces to land. They will be given control of the shield generators themselves and of all ground-to-space weaponry. All fighting vehicles larger than command speeders will be moved to designated military bases and turned over to Imperial control. Though you will, of course, be ultimately answerable to the Empire, your political and social systems will remain under your control. Provided your people behave themselves, of course."
"And once these changes have been implemented?"
"Then you will be part of the Empire, with all the rights and duties that implies."
"There will be no war-level tax levies?" Dos Yah asked suspiciously. "No forced conscription of our young people?"
Pelion could imagine Thrawn's grim smile. No, the Empire would never need to bother with forced conscription again. Not with the Emperor's collection of Sperti cloning cylinders in their hands.
"No to your second question. A qualified no to your first," Thrawn told the Ukiyan. "As you are obviously aware, most Imperial worlds are currently under war status taxation levels. However, there are exceptions, and it is likely that your share of the war effort will come directly from your extensive food production and processing facilities."
There was a long pause from the other end. Dos Yah was no fool, Pelion realized. The Ukiyan knew full well what Thrawn had in mind for his world. First, it would be direct Imperial control of the ground space defenses, then direct control of the food distribution system, the processing facilities, and the vast farming and livestock grazing regions themselves. And in a very short time, the entire planet would have become nothing more than a supply depot for the Imperial war machine. But the alternative was for him to stand silently by and watch as his world was utterly and impossibly demolished before his eyes. And he knew that, too. "We will lower the planetary shields, Chimera, as a gesture of good faith," Dos Yah said at last, his tone defiant, but with a hint of defeat to it. "But before the generators and ground space weaponry can be turned over to Imperial forces,
we shall require certain guarantees regarding the safety of the Ukian people and our land.
Certainly, Thrawn said. Without any trace of the gloating that most Imperial commanders would have indulged in at this point. A small act of courtesy, that Pelion knew was as precisely calculated as the rest of the attack had been. Permitting the Ukian leaders to surrender with their dignity intact would slow down the inevitable resistance to Imperial rule until it was too late.
A representative will be on his way shortly to discuss the particulars with your government, Thrawn continued. Meanwhile, I presume you have no objection to our forces taking up preliminary defense positions.
A sigh, more felt than really heard. We have no objections, Chimera, Dosia said reluctantly. We are lowering the shield now.
On the tactical display, the blue haze surrounding the planet faded away.
Master Cabalth, have the cruisers move to polar positions, Thrawn ordered. We don't want any of the dropships blundering into them. General Covell, you may begin transporting your forces to the surface. Standard defensive positions around all targets.
Acknowledged, Admiral, Covell's voice said. A little too dryly, and Pelion felt a tight smile twitch at his lip. It had only been 2 weeks since the top fleet and army commanders had been let in on the secret of the Mount Tantus cloning project, and Covell was one of those who still hadn't adjusted completely to the idea. Though the fact that three of the companies he was about to lead down to the surface were composed entirely of clones might have had something to do with his skepticism. On the tactical hologram, the first waves of dropships and TIE fighter escorts had exited the Chimera and Stormhawk, fanning out toward their assigned targets. Clones in dropships, about to carry out Imperial orders, as the clone crews in the cloaked cruisers had already done so well. Pelion frowned, an odd and uncomfortable thought suddenly striking him. Had Cabalth been able to guide the cruisers so well because each of their 1,000-man crews were composed of variants on just 20 or so different minds? Or, even more disturbing, could part of the Jedi Master's split-second control have been due to the fact that Cabalth was himself a clone? And either way, did that mean that the Mount Tantus project was playing directly into Cabal's hands in his bid for power? Perhaps. One more question he would have to bring to Thrawn's attention. Pelion looked down at Cabal, belatedly remembering that in the Jedi Master's presence, such thoughts were not his private property. But Cabal wasn't looking at him, knowingly or otherwise. He was staring straight ahead, his eyes unfocused, the skin of his face taut, a faint smile just beginning to crease his lips. Master Cabalth.
They're there,
Cabalth whispered, his voice deep and husky.
They're there,
he repeated, louder this time. Pelion frowned back at the tactical hologram.
Who's where? He asked.
They're at Filva, Cabal said.
Abruptly, he looked up at Pelion, his eyes bright and insane.
My Jedi are at Filva.
Master Cabal, confirm that the cruisers have moved to polar positions,
Thrawn's voice came sharply.
Then report on the feint battles.
My Jedi are at Filva, Cabalth cut him off. What do I care about your battles?
Cabalth.
With a wave of his hand, Cabalth shut off the intercom.
Now, Leia Organa Solo, he murmured softly, you are mine.
Some Falcon twisted hard to starboard as a TIE fighter shot past overhead, lasers blazing away madly as it tried unsuccessfully to track the freighter's maneuver. Clutching her teeth firmly against the movement, Leia Organa Solo watched as one of their escort X-wings blew the Imperial starfighter into a cloud of flaming dust. The sky spun around the Falcon's canopy as the ship rolled back toward its original heading. "Look out!" 3PO wailed from the seat behind Leia as another TIE fighter roared in toward them from the side. The warning was unnecessary. With deceptive ungainliness, the Falcon was already corkscrewing back the other direction to bring its ventral quad laser battery to bear. Faintly audible, even through the cockpit door, Leia heard the sound of a Wookiee battle roar, and the TIE fighter went the way of its late partner. "Good shot, Chewie," Han Solo called into the intercom as he got the Falcon leveled again. "Wedge?" "Still with you, Falcon," Wedge Antilles' voice came promptly. "We're clear for now, but there's another wave of TIE fighters on the way." "Yeah," Han glanced at Leia. "It's your call, sweetheart. You still want to try and reach ground?" 3PO gave a little electronic gasp.
"Surely, Captain Solo, you aren't suggesting..."
"Put a choke valve on it, Goldenrod," Han cut him off. "Leia?" Leia looked out the cockpit canopy at the Imperial Star Destroyer and eight dreadnoughts arrayed against the beleaguered planet ahead, clustering around it like Minox around an unshielded power generator. It was to have been her last diplomatic mission before settling in to await the birth of her twins. A quick trip to calm a nervous Fylvian government and demonstrate the New Republic's determination to protect the systems in this sector. Some demonstration.
"There's no way we can make it through all that," she told Han reluctantly. "Even if we could, I doubt the Fylvians would risk opening the shield to let us in. We'd better make a run for it."
"Sounds good to me," Han grunted. "Wedge, we're pulling out. Stay with us."
"Copy, Falcon," Wedge said. "You'll have to give us a few minutes to calculate the jump back."
"Don't bother," Han said, swiveling around in his seat to key in the nav computer. "We'll feed you the numbers from here."
"Copy. Rogue Squadron, screen formation."
"You know, I'm starting to get tired of this," Han told Leia, swiveling back to face front. "I thought you said your Nogri pals were going to leave you alone."
"This has nothing to do with the Nogri."
Leia shook her head, an odd, half-felt tension stretching at her forehead. Was it her imagination, or were the Imperial ships surrounding Fylva starting to break formation?
"This is Grand Admiral Thrawn playing with his new Dark Force dreadnoughts."
"Yeah," Han agreed quietly, and Leia winced at the momentary flash of bitterness in his sense. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.